webcasting the good news to the world. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, May 28, 2008, the only May 28, 2008 in the history of humanity. And it's the only second night of the Gospel Revolution Spring Pledge Drive. Welcome in, helping you over the hump, and you help us over the hump on this particular Spring Pledge Drive, aught 8. And I got an interesting sound on my headset, Sean. Sounds like the phone is ringing. Do you hear that dial tone thing happening, Michael?
I don't hear it, no.
That's good. But now
from the sounds.
From certain sounds. Can you hear that, Sean? Like there's a phone ringing? You can hear that? You cannot hear that. All right, well, we're off to an auspicious start here on the webcast, and we want, without any further ado, to officially welcome the president of the Gospel Revolution from Houston, Texas, the home office of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael.
Good evening, Brother Glenn.
How are you?
I am just really fantastic, actually. It's been a good day. My car broke down. Had to have it towed in, but all is well.
Where did it break down?
You know, it was about 15 minutes from home. I was just getting ready to get on Beltway 8, which I am very, very grateful that I didn't make it up there onto the Beltway. And I was actually just making it over to the Beltway. And I had a radiator hose busted, I suppose, because there was antifreeze fluid.
Was it spraying all over the place?
Yeah.
Was there smoke
smoking, and it didn't want to, and I didn't know, I didn't realize that, and when I finally saw the smoke, then I looked down at my temperature gauge, and it was, of course, off the peg. But I got pulled over, and it was trying to stop running then because it was overheated so badly.
Right, and your first thought when this travail occurred to you was,
why is God mad at me?
Right, I should have prayed more, should have fasted some more.
You know, it really is wonderful to have none of those
thoughts. That never entered your mind not one time, did it?
Not in any direction. It was not a spiritual experience at all. It was just my car quit. So.
Well, Michael, we want to first kind of rehearse to all the beautiful humans that this is our second week of our pledge drive. We had a good first webcast last week. We have a $15,000 goal over the next 3 weeks as we try and endeavor to raise the operating budget for the Gospel Revolution and Mike William Ministries for the next 3 months. And we raised $20,000 from my mouth to God's ears.
There you go.
We raised,
prophesy, brother, prophesy.
$2,025 last week. But as far as we know, no more money came in all week. So in our attempt to raise 15 grand over the next 3 weeks, we've got to average 5,000 a week. And I don't know if some of you folks went on the website and pledged but didn't email us. When you go to the website, and that's how you do it, you go to gospelrevolution.com and you click on donations, and then there are your choices. You can donate one time. You can donate 10 bucks a month. You can donate $25 a month or 50 bucks a month. Up to $1,000 a month is right there. And now it's automatically received, which we're very thankful for. And for gifts of $100 or more in total, whether you do $10 a month or $100 at one time or whatever you decide to do, you will receive free and postage paid the new teaching CD from Michael called Avoid Strange Gospels. And it was recorded at Carlton Pearson's church in Tulsa. And speaking of the Bishop Carlton Pearson, he will be here tonight, Lord willing, and if the creek don't rise in about 25 minutes, and we're going to be talking to him about what's been up with his life and about the coming Gospel Revolution Convention in Houston. But we need somebody to get on the phone or at least email us. Tell us you're listening and that you want to participate in the pledge drive tonight. Whenever you go on the website, whether if you're listening live or on the archive, please email us and let us know what you did so we can count it towards our goal. The webcast address is webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Webcast@gospelrevolution.com. We would prefer, if you're listening live, we go an extra half an hour on pledge drive nights from 9 until 10:30 Eastern Time in the United States. If you're listening live, call us at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. The call screener extraordinaire, producer and engineer, and just quite a sexy fellow, actually, Mr. Sean O'Halloran is waiting to take your call. And right off the get-go, we have Mr. Chris Harrington, who's online with us.
Yay, Harrington in Nacogdoches, Texas.
Where are you? Where are you, Chris?
I'm in Nacogdoches, Texas, the oldest town in Texas.
What? Wait, one more time. In Nacogdoches?
Nacogdoches.
What does that mean?
It's an Indian name, and it's local stuff. Just in East Texas, we're about 3 miles north of Houston.
That's awesome. So how are you familiar with the Gospel Revolution?
Well, I'll tell you, it's kind of an interesting story. My wife and I have been remarried, and here's how that happened. We were married in 1975, and we divorced in 77. We were having a hard time communicating with each other, and we were apart for 19 years. But what happened was she sent me some of Mike's tapes, and Mike's tapes were very instrumental in getting us back together, so we had some groundwork to be able to communicate with each other, and so now here we are after almost 12 years of being remarried. So Mike brought us together even before we even met him.
How about that?
So, Chris, you're well familiar with the teaching and have embraced the gospel, or better said, you've been established in the grace of God.
You bet. And
that's a great story. But you got some questions for Michael this evening?
Well, I'm interested in when Carlton's going to be here, and I have some questions for him. But I'm always interested in what Mike has been learning. You know, because I've seen him several times when he's talking, and he's learning right while he's talking up there on stage. And I'm wondering what's hot, what's on the top of the agenda right now? What's he working on right this minute?
Good question, Chris.
Well, we've
talked about that, Michael. How as you're going through the Bible and the passages, and you're reading them in context, that you are literally learning right along with the audience.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And you know, I just have to stop and comment just a moment on Chris's story. I mean, you know, so many times the gospel gets blamed for a lot of things, but I mean, how many people could say that they had been divorced for 19 years, and then the gospel, literally, the gospel was the catalyst for bringing their marriage back together. So,
since you brought that up, Mike, I want to ask Chris. Chris, since you guys came back together with the foundation of the gospel, of the grace and peace of God, how in a tangible way has that affected you and your wife's relationship in the second go-around?
Well, in every way. First off, in our first marriage, we really had a difficult time communicating because we didn't have the same vocabulary. And, I mean, we literally, we were raised in similar circumstances, but her family was so different from mine, and we really had, in a very legalistic way, I had my way of saying it, she had her way of saying it, and we didn't really have a common vocabulary. So I think one of the things that has happened here is that because we've been driven really to study and really try to understand and learn for ourselves, we could build a common vocabulary. Like, say, for example, one of the things that I asked her when we first got together was, what would you like to do? How would you like the world to change? And she said, well, I'd like for there to be peace in the world. And I said, well, let's do that. And she said, well, we can't do that. There's not going to be peace in the world because you've got wars and all these things going on and people are just really wild and crazy. And I said, but we can have it. And I think that's part of the understanding that we have together is that
we know that we're not against each other and we're not against the world, that we can bring a net amount of peace into the world just by being peaceful together.
So do you got you guys never argue anymore?
Oh, once in a while she has to set me straight, but I'd say for the most part we get along just great.
Yeah, one of the things that I've seen in my relationship with Dawn is that while arguments do occur, they're much less frequent, and when they do occur, we get over them real quick.
Well, I think one of the things that we have is that we have a missing 19 years, so we don't really have too much time for a lot of bickering because we got so much time to make up for.
Fair enough. So, Mikey, what,
we've been apart for 2 decades.
Well, you're making up for lost time, I'm sure.
Sure bet.
But that's for another website. We're
sure.
Talking about the gospel tonight, and Michael,
right.
what's on your play? What have you been ruminating over lately?
Well, actually, thinking over a comment that Ken Vandeveer made last week about the experience, recorded in the Book of Acts of the Upper Room experience. And I don't know if you were listening,
Glenn?
Chris. But
yeah, Glenda, we got you. Glenda's on, too.
Oh, awesome. Glenda.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hey, hon, it's good to talk to you. You got to get back down to Houston.
I know, I miss you.
Are you guys coming to the convention, Glenda?
You bet we are.
Awesome. Well, we were just answering Chris's question when he put you on.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. We're glad. We're happy to hear from you.
I just wanted to say a couple of things, and that is that one of the things that the gospel did for me is it helped me understand that God really, really loved me just the way I was. And that all of the guilt and shame that I was carrying around with me for decades about the mistakes I'd made and things that had happened in my life, that has pretty much gone away. Every now and again, it raises its ugly head, and I just tell it doesn't have any place in my life anymore because I know where I stand in Christ. I know how He sees me, and that's just so very healing.
That Michael's called being established in grace.
Yes, it is. We've talked about that recently, Glenda, the difference between receiving the grace of God and being established in the grace of God, that there is a big difference, and you just described that difference for sure.
That's true. It's good.
So are you guys coming to the convention in Houston?
Yes, we're going to be there, and we're looking forward to meeting you, Glenn, and also meeting Carlton Pearson.
Yes, well, we're going to have Carlton on in a few minutes.
That'll be great.
And we've got another call, but does Chris want to say goodbye?
Yes, he does. Hold on.
All right.
Hey.
Yeah, Mike was right in the middle of answering your question when you put Glenn on.
It'll be on the website.
Right, on the archive. So go back and listen.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, tonight is the Spring Pledge Drive. And Chris, what would you say to folks who are contemplating giving to this effort? Why is this a worthwhile effort? If you think it is, and if you don't,
well,
please hang up quickly.
I think it is a worthwhile effort, and the reason is that so many people are reached directly with the gospel. It's not like you're paying out to something that's a series of things that finally, after a little while, it filters down and then finally the work is done. This is directly to the work. So what I'm finding in working with Mike is that he's out there on the forefront and he's getting his tapes out there. He's getting the gospel out. The people who are working with him are busy delivering the message. So it's not like people are, taking some, skimming some off the top and using that for something else. It's going directly to the work itself. And in working with Mike and working with different people that he's worked with, I'm watching people, and they're delivering the stuff. You know, they're delivering the gospel right there. So to me, it's an effective way of using your money to be able to reach other people.
And I wish we could skim off the top, actually, Chris. As Jimmy Swagger used to say, to be quite frank and honest with you. So did you guys want to participate in that tonight at all?
Yeah, actually, we're going to.
To the tune of what?
To the tune of what, Glenda? We're going to add money tonight to the... We're
going to talk about it. She says, this is the way we do everything.
Nice. All right, we'll talk about it, and then email us and let us know what you guys are going
to
do.
Okay, now, the question I'm going to ask Carlton, and I really want to ask him personally, but and I would like to ask this of Mike, too, and of you. What is it that, you know, makes you personally, in some way, a witness to the gospel? For example, I noticed that when people have problems in their lives, that the gospel is able to turn those problems around and turn their what used to be a victimization into a victory by creating in them the sense of how words are used, how their sensibilities can reach and meet the needs of other people. And so what previously was an abuse to them turns around being a strength. And so what for you is in your background that is what you're drawing on in order to make your statement of faith?
That's a great question. Michael, why don't you tackle that first?
I was listening, and I got lost in the middle of the question.
All right, well, I'll answer the question.
Yeah, go ahead.
The question basically is how does the gospel affect your witness or your witnessing for Christ?
Well, I was thinking about this. Have you had any special experience in something in your past that gives you a voice now to be able to talk to people individually? Like, say, for myself, I had a really poor education growing up, and in going to school, I felt like I was always excluded from school, and I really wasn't in the right place. So now, after I went to college, and I said, I want to go back and experience school all over again, but this time I'm going to make it a place where kids want to go. So I have 30 years of experience now as a public school teacher, and I still have my kids, my past students, calling me up. In fact, I saw several today working in different places in town, and we're all still good friends, even after 30 years.
That's awesome. Well, I think the thing that it's affected me so differently is that literally we are a witness to what Christ has done. We're not trying to get people to change anything in their life.
Sure.
And it's gotten to the place now, Michael, where we can share this message in any venue to any individual, not ashamed, as the Apostle Paul said, I am not ashamed of the gospel in any way, shape, or form. We're just telling people what their reality is. They don't have to believe it. The faith that we have is not faith towards God. We have confidence in the faith that God has towards us, right, Mike?
Yes, absolutely. And the the thing that has really amazed most people about, quote, their witness is that it is not it's not something they do, it's just what they are. And you know, under the requirement to, it's amazing how many people actually started sharing the gospel for the first time after they found out that we were all equal. It just seems to make it the equality issue. I mean, of course, it's much easier to talk to your equals. And
sure, absolutely.
It's very uncomfortable to talk to somebody who you see as less than you or who you see as more than you, which in any other circumstances, you almost see everybody in some other category other than
Mike, let me ask you about the word tolerance. I feel about the word tolerance that it's a way of saying, you know, I'm okay and everything, and I'm gonna allow that you're the way that you are, and I'm going to tolerate you. So when we talk about tolerance, it's not a word that's really in the same mode as something like when we think of real equality.
Yeah,
if I'm an equal with someone, I'm not just merely tolerating that person or accepting them. You know, I'll accept you just the way you are. I think really equality goes way beyond those things. And I think that that's one of the things I'm trying to get to in this question is that at a certain point, who I am and the nature of the experience that I've had in my life enables me to use words in a certain way that if I hadn't had those negative experiences in my past, I wouldn't have any street credit to be able to talk with these kids now. Because when they say, we had family problems or we went through so-and-so, it's like, yeah, tell me about it. You know, and I can really address that stuff in a realistic way because I was there too. So in a way, what used to be a real problem to me in terms of my accepting it as a part of my value system, in fact, those things have turned now into something that's a part of who I am. And I'm glad to have those experiences because it gives me a grounding for being able to be real with other people.
No doubt. Well, Chris, thank you so much for participating. And
all right,
absolutely.
Just fire off an email. We'll try to get that question to Carlton when he calls.
Okay, I'll do it.
And then just log on there. What town are you from again in Texas?
Nacogdoches, Texas.
Nacogdoches. That's just a great word in and of itself.
It is.
Thanks for calling in, Chris.
All right, enjoy. See y'all later.
All right,
love you guys.
Chris and Glenda Harrington from Nacogdoches, Texas. You ever been to Nacogdoches?
I've been to Nacogdoches. I've been through Nacogdoches.
Nice.
And I've been invited to Nacogdoches to come and spend the weekend at the Harrington's Reserve.
That's awesome. This is Glenn Klein online. It is the second night of the Gospel Revolution Spring Pledge Drive. We are endeavoring to raise $15,000 over the next 3 weeks to basically take care of the budget for the next 3 months of the Gospel Revolution. We're encouraging you to call tonight at 1-800-436-3260 or just go to the website at gospelrevolution.com and click on there and click on donations and then do your best. We're looking for monthly donors you can click on. There's all kinds of different categories, one-time gifts. Don't think that any gift is too small and certainly too large. We are adding it all up, and we hope to be at the end of 3 weeks at $15,000. We're at $2,025 from last week, and so obviously we've got some catching up to do. We want to hear from you. Just whatever you do, just email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com and let us know so we can include it in the total. For gifts of $100 or more, totaling $100 or more, so if you just give $10 a month, you will get the $100 thank you gift, which is the Gospel Revolution teaching CD, Avoid Strange Gospels. Always good advice to avoid strange gospels. This is a teaching that Michael did at Carlton Pearson's Church in Tulsa. We are waiting to hear from Carlton tonight, and we'll be talking to him about his travels and also about the coming Gospel Revolution Convention in Houston that Carlton will be at with hopefully many of you, with Michael, with me, with the good folks from Nacogdoches, Chris and Glenda Harrington, with Greg Ambergy, with Tim Pruitt, and so many others, Rick Spencer. And we hope to have this next gentleman in with us, calling us tonight from Des Moines, Iowa, Mr. George Howell of BoldGrace.com. George! Hello, George.
Where's George?
What happened to George, Sean? George just called back. We must have dropped him off when we got rid of the Harringtons. So bring George on.
Bring on George.
Oh, George, we just gave you this major big introduction. And
oh, man, I missed it all. You know what? I know it won't matter to you, Michael, but there's a little hockey game going on here tonight.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, that's right. George is from Pittsburgh, and the Penguins are taking on the Detroit Red Wings in the Stanley Cup in game number 3. In Pittsburgh at the Igloo.
And Sidney Crosby has 2 goals already.
And what's
2-0.
It's 2-0 Penguins. They're down in the series 2-0. So that's our Gospel Revolution sports update.
So they're on commercial now. So how you guys doing?
We're doing wonderfully.
Awesome. It's good to hear from you.
Hey, Mike. I was thinking today, the reason I called in, I was thinking about the apocalypse.
The apocalypse. Armageddon, if you will.
Armageddon, if you will. And it occurred to me, I looked up the meaning of the apocalypse, and apocalypse literally means a lifting of the veil. It is a term applied to the disclosure to certain privileged persons of something hidden from the majority of humankind.
Wow.
I don't know that I'm privileged, but I have survived the apocalypse.
How about that?
When the temple veil was rent, the veil was lifted. And it destroyed everything in me, basically. And it was very hard to recover from until I knew that there was no recovery to recover from.
That's fantastic, George.
The apocalypse, and so, Mike, I just want you to know that I'm a believer again in the apocalypse.
How about that?
So, George, what did the veil, what was uncovered to you?
It was uncovered to me that I was righteous and holy all along. That once the cross went up in the air, all judgment went into the cross. And that when the veil was lifted in my life, I began to see that I was righteous and holy. And as I began to see that, I began to see that everyone else was righteous and holy. And the interesting thing about that is the people I began to accept and my circle of people began to get bigger and bigger, where before it had gotten smaller and smaller. And now I've heard Mike talk about it before. I look at my spirituality based on who I include, not who I exclude. And so I think I'm going to have a t-shirt made up. I survived the apocalypse.
I think that'd be a good t-shirt to offer at the Gospel Revolution Convention.
You know, yes,
you know where the apocalypse came from, of course, and where the emphasis, of course, is the book of Revelation. And that's exactly, Michael, what happened to John at the, yep. on the day of the Lord. The veil was lifted, and he had an apocalypse.
Exactly. Yeah, it definitely was the apocalypse. And he saw it unfold right in front of him as he was standing in front of the cross, according to the record that he gave, and even gave record of very technical record of where he was and when he got that revelation, and because the very people that he quoted used that term. The day of the Lord or the Lord's day, very specifically, very, very specifically, to refer to the exact day that Jesus would die on the cross for the sin of the human race, and that was the day of the Lord. So John made it very clear that he did not get that revelation on the Isle of Patmos. He said he got it on the Lord's day. And he just would not have been saying, I think he got sent to the Isle of Patmos because of his revelation, but
exactly.
He didn't get sent to the Isle of Patmos to get the revelation.
Well, actually, Mike, it even says that. He said, I was on the Isle of Patmos because of this word.
Absolutely.
And then
he
could tell why he was there.
Yeah. Yeah, can you imagine what a place that put him in? Even with the disciples, I mean, my goodness, you know, this man seeing all of this fulfilled at the cross. I mean, they still did not even understand the fulfillment of all things at that time. So to hear him voice what he saw when he was there on the Lord's Day and recorded to have been standing there in front of the cross, boy, what a confusing thing that had to be for them at that time.
Well, we've had two tremendous understandings come forth in the first 2 weeks of the webcast pledge drive. The one you were referencing, Michael, earlier from Ken Vandeveer about the so-called upper room experience and why that was necessary, possibly. And now we understand what the apocalypse is from George.
You know, and the interesting thing is, John was banished to the Isle because of this lifting of the veil, this apocalypse that he had. And still today, when you have your personal apocalypse, the church world will banish you to the Isle of Patmos.
Well, that's what we're going to be talking to Carlton Pearson about his experience on the Isle of Patmos momentarily,
yeah,
George. So that's
exactly. Mike's been there. We've all been there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you know what? It's a wonderful place to be.
That's some good stuff, Mr. George.
That's awesome, man. We're talking with George Howell of Bold Grace. You can go to boldgrace.com. George is in Des Moines, Iowa tonight, but rooting on his hometown Pittsburgh Penguins tonight in the Stanley Cup. So it is the spring pledge drive, George. You want to hop on and participate in our effort to raise the budget this month?
Yes, I sure did. Right before I came on, I donated $50.
Thanks, bro. Much appreciated.
All right.
Thanks.
Hey, Mike, love you, brother. And
love you, George. Can't wait to see you, man.
Well, if there's a Lord above, pray to him that something miraculous will happen so I can get down there in November.
All right.
You'll be here with us.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, George.
All right, I'm gonna turn you off and I'm gonna turn you back on to the. I'm gonna watch the game and listen to you guys.
Well, you're gonna dual task. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a dime.
Right, love you guys. Talk to you later.
Go Pens.
Bye.
There's George Howell. This is Glenn Klein Online. We're at $20,000 so bad, Michael. I want to say it's so bad.
You're doing it, yeah.
$20,075 is our total so far in the Gospel Revolution Spring Pledge Drive. Encouraging you to call tonight, 1-800-436-3260. For gifts of $100 or more, you will receive free and postage paid, the new teaching CD, Avoid Strange Gospels, that was recorded at Carlton Pearson's Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We are waiting on Carlton to call this evening, and it will be a pleasure to speak with him about his experience. But we want to hear from you as well. 1-800-436-3260. If you are listening on the archive, please go to the GospelRevolution.com webpage and click on donations and do your best, whether it be a monthly gift or a one-time donation. It all adds up, and it all goes towards sharing this message with more and more folks who need to get freed in their hearts and their minds and their souls that they are righteous in Christ, just like every single human being on the face of the earth. And just email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. As we said, for gifts totaling $100 or more, whether it be on a monthly donation or a one-time gift, you will receive the new teaching CD, Avoid Strange Gospels. There has been so much strangeness that has been going on, Michael. It's amazing. In between each week, I mean, last week after the webcast, we had John McCain distancing himself from John Hagee and Rod Parsley based on some of the silliness that they taught. I was on a national radio show talking about this after it happened last week, and I got to share with this national audience the truth of what the gospel says. And I was just a caller, folks, calling in. And, you know, when in a normal radio talk show, if you're on for 2 or 3 minutes, I mean, that's a long time. But this guy was kind of taken with what I had to say. He had me on for about 15 minutes, and I got to lay it out there very concisely, and he even complimented me about my intelligence and my insight, because the guy said, I am not a biblical scholar. And I said, well, I am a biblical scholar, and here's what it actually says, and here is why John Hagee and Rod Parsley's message is so dangerous, much more dangerous to the nation and to the world than anything that Jeremiah Wright had to say. So we had a very good exchange. It was a great opportunity.
That's awesome. Those little opportunities do arise. Good to take advantage of them.
And now we do have the aforementioned Bishop Carlton Pearson online. Carlton?
Yes?
How are you this evening?
I'm very fine, thank you. How are you all?
We are doing wonderfully. Say hello to Michael.
Hello, Alden, friend. Michael?
How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, buddy. You sound good.
It's good to hear your voice again.
Thank you.
Where are you calling from tonight?
From home, from Tulsa.
You are in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
So, Carlton, our folks have followed your story and your situation closely. Why don't you give everybody a little bit of an update where this whole journey has taken you?
Well, I always ask the question, have you ever seen yourself through the eyes of someone else you have become? It's like having an out-of-body experience. I have, this has been for me about a 6 or 7 year journey since the beginning of 2000 when I began to evolve, long about the time I met Michael, but today I am actually ministering in churches all over the country, but not very many of the traditional churches. I'm doing Unity churches and Unitarian churches and United Church of Christ and Jewish synagogues, and the true world is now opening up, very attentively listening. Though at the same time, I'm getting lots of calls from the people who once were my detractors, bishops and leaders of the traditional Pentecostal, charismatic, evangelical, fundamentalist background. They're either looking are leaning this direction, but they're all starting to listen, at least, to the newer thought, the newer conversation, and reconsidering a lot of the things they once denounced as heresy or demonic or end-time false prophets and all that stuff.
It's not so new. It's about as old as the Apostle Paul.
At least. They think that we've come up with some new doctrine. This is, as you said, the first 500 years of Christian history. Universalism was the general consensus among the church fathers from not only Origen, but Gregory of Nyssa, Clement of Alexandria, and Theodoret, and so many of the great churches over 300 years. They just discussed this very openly.
Yeah, it's very true.
So we are just sort of rehearsing, remembering, and reconciling again, representing, recalling, recollecting to the wider audience that this is really the mind of the first church leaders, and I think we've dissolved into this other cultish mentality over the centuries.
Well, I'm really glad to hear you just call it for what it is, a cult. They think that sect in Texas is a cult. This is a cult. And, of course, Carlton, you were hooked up with Oral Roberts and with Pat Robertson and with all those guys who are TBN and all that stuff. And we've all experienced, we were just talking to George Howell right before you got on from boldgrace.com, and he found out in his study that the apocalypse literally means the unveiling of something fresh and something new. That's what apocalypse means. And you were very much a national and international figure when you went through your apocalypse and the truth of the gospel was unveiled to you. We've all experienced this for those of us that have been established in grace and having the people that were in our lives in the church walk away from us. Have any of the close relationships that you had, you talked about some of the leaders starting to call you, but have any of the people that you literally were just as close as you could be to your own family, have they made any attempt to contact you in the last several years?
Yes, actually. I've had several conversations with some of those people. It's risky right now because what they call hyper-grace teaching usually is taught by those who have something to hide. And so many of those who were most vociferously adversarial to me are those who did not want to be associated with a grace message that made people think they were hiding something. Well, some of these men were already under suspicion. And so they avoided me so that it wouldn't look like they were soft on quote-unquote sin.
Right.
And they were not, for many of them, it wasn't a theological issue. It was a business decision. They had to keep their finances flowing in. One man said recently, if I named him, you would know him. He said, I believe all that stuff, but why, I got $1 million coming in a week. Why mess that up? If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Give us his initials anyway, Carlton.
Well, that's about most of them anymore. They got all that money coming in.
Well, you know, they whether it be through Mike, who had the same experience that you did, or your situation, they got to witness firsthand what happens when you embrace the truth of the reconciliation of the world to God through Christ for everybody. And it did affect your bottom line, didn't it, for a while?
Absolutely it did. What's happening is my apparent turnaround to some people, or at least the fact that they wrote my obituary, they thought I was dead and buried, but every time they turn around, I'm popping up on some secular show or radio or television or some magazine, Psychology Today. They say, this guy is not dead yet. Maybe he's not going to die, and if he doesn't, then maybe it's worth us taking the risk. When I lost everything, from thousands of followers to the church and the property, the real estate, and even my intellectual rights, it said, this is stupid. This guy is going to shipwreck his ministry. He, in fact, has done that. And I can't. I had a 74-year-old Methodist preacher say to me last week, and a 72-year-old, and both of them now are in, like, Universalist churches or United Church of Christ, said God showed this to them 30 years ago, but they couldn't afford to lose the man's or their pension or their retirement. And they were sobbing when they said this to me.
Guys, you know, you both went through the same experience. Michael, we're talking with Carlton Pearson, by the way. This is Glenn Klein Online. We've got Michael Williams from the Gospel Revolution on night number two of the Gospel Revolution Spring Pledge Drive, encouraging you to call. If you want to talk to Carlton, 1-800-436-3260, or if you'd like to make a donation, please feel free to do so. If you're listening on the archive, just go to gospelrevolution.com and click on donations and do your best, and then email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com and let us know what you did. But I want to ask both you fellas, Michael, Carlton, if you knew what the financial cost was going to be when you got involved in it, because I know, Michael, you didn't know, obviously, what you were getting into, but if you knew, if you could have fast-forwarded 5-10 years and found out what it was going to cost you financially, what would your reaction have been?
Well, you know, the strange thing about it is, and I think this is probably true for Carlton, too, because I remember some of our conversations back in years past. I think we did know. I think that it was quite obvious when you begin to let those things slip out of your mouth, you know, any illusion that we had that this great revelation was going to be another one of those times like other revelations that I had or Carlton had, and that just caused people to rise to their feet. It's obvious that is not going to happen. And but I did know. I'd be surprised if Carlton would say that he had no clue as to what was going to happen.
Carlton, did you know to the extent of what you were facing when you started teaching this?
It wasn't so much finance as it was my very ministerial legacy, my reputation as a quote-unquote man of God, a bishop in the Lord's church, an evangelist, a prophet, apostle, or whatever. All that stuff was challenged. And when I lost my standing and my status in a world I had helped create or at least accentuate, that was more devastating. And I didn't know I would lose that much. It wasn't, to me, a dollar sign issue. I knew I'd lose members, and I knew I'd have to shift some things and cut back. But it's like I lost the entire ministry.
Yeah.
And had to start all over again with my own life, not just my ministry, but I had to start my whole life over. I didn't know it would be that costly, because that's like starting from scratch at 50 years old.
You're having back to even having to find the very essence of who you are.
I could always make money, and I wasn't
going to do
as much.
It's literally,
personally, financially,
is rediscovering
as I was in Minnesota. And that was all of my identity, my self-worth, was wrapped up in that property.
Because the rest of it has been taken away.
Yes, the equity, but the members and the position I had in this town and the larger charismatic Pentecostal world. That's what I was not prepared to lose.
This is Carlton Pearson. We're talking with Michael Williams, The Gospel Revolution, Glenn Klein Online. We've got questions and comments for you, Carlton. We'd like to get those. We also want to talk about the coming Gospel Revolution Convention in November in Houston, and Carlton will be our special guest. But first, online right now is a friend of Carlton's. We have Melissa online. Melissa!
Well, actually, I'm a friend of Mike Williams.
my note says, well, you're a friend of Carlton's now, my friend.
Yes, you are.
Well, Carlton,
I don't have many of those, Melissa, so I'll take you.
I just wanted to call and thank you for your wonderful message last week at Dottie Rambo's funeral. We felt such reconciliation there. And I just wanted you to know that there were so many there in the congregation that we're so glad that you're there, and we're so blessed just to see you and to you know, hear your words and hear you speak again. And
thank you.
I just had to call and say that. We loved it.
We appreciate it, Melissa. I didn't know that Dottie Rambo had passed on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure, Carlton, there were many, because she used to be on the Christian television all the time. And
the place was packed, and one of the first people when they brought me into the room where we were assembling before those who participated in the service, the first person I saw was Barbara Mandrell. She came with her arm already outstretched toward me, eyeball to eyeball. She never flinched. She said, "Hello, I'm Barbara Mandrell." It's an honor to meet you. I respect your courage. I respect your message. I just want you to know, keep up the good work. Now, and then kept walking. We didn't have an engaging conversation. She walked right past me, but she did say that. And I had limo drivers. I had people that were not in the ministry. The pastor of that church, Brother Hardwick, this is United Pentecostal, one of the strictest Pentecostal churches there. Everybody I met embraced me. They were warm. There was Andre and Sandra Crouch and Lulu, whom I've known for many years. But Dottie came to my church. Dottie said, son, you always going to be my chocolate son, and I'll never turn on you. If you need anybody to stand with you, support you, I'll do it on nationwide television, secular or sacred. It doesn't matter. I'm with you. I like what you're saying, and I believe in it.
That's awesome.
One of the first, they asked me to read the resolutions, and I read one from, the first one I read was from Lily Tomlin, and in front of that whole crowd, and they were, Dottie and Lily were very, very close friends. Lily is a same gender loving person. She's open, she's sweet, she's a star, she's, but Dottie and her prayed together, they shared together. She didn't call herself a particular Pentecostal Christian or anything. She didn't emphasize that part, but she was a very loving, warm woman, and Dottie wanted that letter read. Reba and Donnie wanted that letter read because they are inclusionists. And I was very proud to read her letter. I met Lily myself here in Tulsa not long ago. Sweet, wonderful. But the general consensus, Dino was there, Andre and Sandra Crouch, Sandy Patty, and everybody I spoke to were very, and this should be encouraging to you too, Mike, everybody was warm and affirming and welcoming and loving. It appears to me, Glenn, that the inclusion consciousness, the openness, the grace message is sweeping this country because the literal bottom is falling out of the other expression. There's all these preachers under investigation. There's all this trauma. John Hagee is one of the ones who called me and said to me on the phone, Carlson, we are concerned about your statement. The whole world is saved. They just don't believe it. I mean, they just don't know it.
Right.
The other person on the phone was Charles Green, who happened to be at the funeral as well. I hugged his neck. Ted Haggard, who was on my wing at ORU, head of the American Association of Evangelicals. I've known Ted for 30-some years. I've had one communication since this whole thing came out, and he sent word to me and just said, tell Kraut, and I said, oops. Oops. So there's
You know, I know Ted real well. Ted stayed at my house, and I stayed at his house, Carlton, and he's got a great sense of humor. It's good to know that with everything he's gone through, that's still intact.
Oh, yeah. He still laughs. He still is anointed. He still is appointed. He still is as sparkle. You know, if he was preaching, he'd be just as good as he ever was. You know, Ted's a wonderful guy.
Well, somebody needs to tell him that God sees him as perfect and righteous and holy, period.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I told him on the headline, I said, if Ted walked in here right now, the first thing I'd do was throw my arms around him and love him and tell him to go straight to that pulpit and get back to what God called you to do.
No doubt.
That's my attitude about all this.
Michael, this is great news.
Yes, it is good news. You know, this is, I think that, you know, all of these years and the times that, you know, that I've stood and Carlton has stood and faced congregations and places and made comments and statements and, my goodness, you know, I think the one thing that I was more unprepared for was this. I mean, you know, I was actually was more prepared for the negative part. It's all of this that I was not prepared for, Carlton. And I, you know, in my mind, when I first started sharing this back in the early 90s, at least the fullness of redemption, anyway, for the whole world. When I first started sharing this and getting just, I mean, literally, you know, my conferences would be shut down after the first night and stuff. I kind of played out in my mind, you know, I had such great hope in my heart, you know, for the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace. And I really had nothing but absolute persuasion in my heart about it, and knowing that it was the foundation of the very life of God in the, you know, for this planet anyway, and it really is the answer for the entire human race, not just some people.
Yeah.
And but I remember Carlton playing that out in my mind, and thinking, you know, at what point will this come at least to the point of being a part of the debate on the world stage in the future? And by my calculation at the time, I was thinking that it would possibly come, at least begin to rise to the forum of public debate, maybe by the time when I was in my 80s. And lo and behold, I mean, we have had this on the front page. This has challenged every denomination around the world. And it literally has. And I know that, you know, just through the tapes and stuff, as they even circulated in and around your church there in the late 90s, I know. And but then, of course, I was so grateful to see and to come to know you and then your experience, and then to see the role that you've played in helping bring this to the world stage. It's been really, really amazing.
Michael, I have such a huge, huge admiration and respect for you to stay and stand the course. I was listening to Michael's tapes. There were actually ladies from some of the churches in Tulsa who would slip those tapes to me. But even before I started, like, you need to hear this. You ever heard of Michael Williams? Well, I hadn't. You need to hear this. So I started listening about, who is this guy? Of course, I thought he was speaking to huge crowds. And when I finally met him, he said, no, I was sitting at a table. There might have been two or three people in some of those. Sounds like he was in an auditorium. He had been so rejected, but he had perfected and honed that word. An incredible teacher, a profound teacher. I think one of the greatest on the planet. And here I get to see now everybody. I mean, literally, I mean, Michael J. Fox flew all the way in here from New York to spend 2 days. And he's an Anglican. His wife is a Jew. And the rabbi sent word to me. The Jewish community really has embraced this. I was able to preach the gospel of inclusion and pack out Jewish synagogues here in Tulsa. The Jewish community has been very warm, very gracious to me. There were Christians, Holy Ghost-filled or charismatic Christians, listening to your teachings, Michael, quietly, guardedly, but profoundly touched and moved by them. And just like they were slipping them into my hands, they were circulating your tapes everywhere. It's amazing how you'd sit there and open the scripture and expound as if you were talking to 10,000 people, and there might have been 3 or 9 or 10 or I don't know, you know, the smallest crowd you spoke to, but I couldn't tell any less intensity in your teaching or your revelation than I do today if you're talking to my congregation. I was just I love you for that, and I thank God for you. And now the time has come when there's a global shift in religious sensibilities. Muslims, Jews, Catholics,
atheists.
I hear from Mormons, Quakers, you name it.
Yeah.
Some of the most powerful and sublime letters about God and grace are written to me by atheists or agnostics who seem to experience something with God outside the cult following of Jesus. And I'm a follower of Jesus, but we have become a cult or culture of exclusionism and something that Jesus would be ashamed of were he on the planet today in the flesh. And so I think our message of grace and peace and reconciliation, it's not a doctrine, it's the message of reconciliation, and the ministry of reconciliation is really touching the hearts. The USA Today, about a year ago summer, had the front page had a picture of Dr. Graham sitting on his front porch in Montreat, and the headline, front page in color, said, Gospel of Billy Graham, a big colon, inclusion.
Wow.
And somebody called me all the way from New York. Dr. Graham and the man that introduced him to speak at ORU in 1965 for the dedication, he is now 89 years old. He's in a nursing home here in Tulsa. Used to be pastor of First Presbyterian. Came to me personally after hearing me speak at a Muslim mosque in an interfaith dialogue about this. He said, what you're saying, because I had made reference to the fact that I didn't think Billy Graham would be as harsh as Franklin has been. about Muslims and Muhammad and others. I said, I don't think Billy Graham would ever speak disparagingly about a people group that we are sent to love. Because they had asked me, what did I think about Franklin's statements, which were pretty harsh in those days. Anyway, this gentleman came to me afterward and told me, he said, what you said about Billy Graham is a lot closer to the truth than you think. I said, what do you mean? He said, I've known him for over 50 years. We've discussed universalism for over 50 years. And he's pretty much come to the conclusion that ultimately the world is and or will be saved.
Well, it'd be nice if he shared that with everybody. That would have a little bit of an impact, wouldn't it?
That's exactly what I said. Do you think he'll ever say it before he dies? He said, well, I don't know. Because he has to turn, you know, if Franklin or anybody...
Franklin can have anything to do with it, probably not.
Well, they'd lose a lot of money.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They got the whole... They've got Ruth on display now down there, and which she wasn't thrilled about before she passed away. But, Melissa, thank you so much for calling.
Yes,
one more thing, if I could mention.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think one of the greatest honors at that service for Dottie Rambeau was the presentation from the President of the United States. Carlton had that distinction. I don't believe that was an accident. He, at the request of our President, presented the flag that flew over the White House on Mother's Day, the day she died, to Reva. And the whole congregation leapt to their feet, and it was one of the most touching moments of the service there. And certainly we didn't believe that it was an accident. That was Carlton's place to do that. We were so glad to see that.
Well, thanks for sharing that,
Melissa. I'm telling you, brother, it's touched us. It really is, and it has.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked so much about it, and... we just love you, and we're following you. There's a crew that listen to Mike and get his teachings, and so we're and you know I'm my friend Patrick Henderson, and he believes this way, and he is writing songs about it.
where do you live, Melissa?
I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
Nice.
Well, yes, sir.
Well, it's great to hear from Nashville tonight. Thanks so much for calling. Stay in touch, okay?
Thanks.
There's Melissa.
Love you, Melissa.
From Nashville. Carlton, you got a few more minutes?
Yes, I'm not.
Okay, we got a great email that just ties perfectly into what you've been saying. This is an email that from one of our regular listeners. He says, all of us have our own personal experience which allows us to have a special access to the world. This makes us uniquely qualified to meet the needs of others in our own special way, and in this sense, we bring our own flavor to the message that Christ is the Redeemer of the world. Because of this love, we have been given the gift of being transformed, being renewed, and being reborn in an awareness of our own worth in the eyes of God. We can turn our victimization into victory by learning how to turn our negative experiences into wisdom, and this is, to me, the true strength of the gospel of grace. Your expression, Carlton, the words you have chosen, the gospel of inclusion, asks us to see the very nature of God as covering all, inviting all, and seeing ourselves in all others. Have you had any special experiences in being excluded that creates this world, this word choice for you? Why is the inclusion of all so specifically important to you?
Because I, when I felt the sting of the exclusion and the denunciation and vilification, denigration of my own soul by people I loved, respected, and assumed the same was reciprocated, it was stunning. And I thought, well, why would God, and the name of my next book is God is Not a Christian, because I was explaining, really defending this position, that, well, after all, you got to remember, God is not a Christian. God was God before there was the religion that we call Christian. Jesus wasn't a Christian, just like Buddha wasn't a Buddhist. Muhammad wasn't a Muslim. These religions and cults were started after these people died.
Well, we all know that God is Jewish, for God's sake. So.
Oh. Yeah, that's exactly. Well, I presumed as much.
I'm Jewish, Carlton. So,
are you Jewish? My goodness, it makes it even more fascinating.
It's fun. I got to share the gospel at my brother's synagogue. And in my wildest imagination when I was in the church, if anybody would ever told me, I would have been welcomed and promoted to come and share the gospel in a Jewish synagogue, I would say there's no way that that was possible, but there it was. And in the same way that you found in the synagogues in Tulsa and wherever else you've had a chance to speak, I was in Chicago, and they were fascinated by it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Jewish Federation called right after the about 6 or 7 years ago when the first thing hit the newspaper front page in Tulsa, the first group to call me was the Jewish Federation. And they had me to breakfast at one of the exclusive restaurants here, and the room was packed with their Federation leaders. And they wanted to know what I was really saying. And one of the young men, a little feisty attorney, he said, "Well, Bishop Pearson, is it your intention to evangelize Jews?" And I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, yes, I have good news for everybody." I didn't use the word evangelize.
Yeah.
I said, I don't want you to mistake the word evangelization was proselytization. It is not my intention to convert anybody, but to convince everybody. And they said, of what? That you're loved absolutely and unconditionally by God. I said, you Jews have too many rules. You're worse than us Pentecostals, and you're breaking all of them. Well, they laughed. You know, it was fun. And I said, you must understand. They said, well, then come to the synagogue and tell us that. I said, are you serious? They said, absolutely. I said, well, you know, I preach. I happen to believe that we are redeemed through the sacrifice of Christ, but I don't want to offend anybody. They said, nah, you can come because you're not trying to convert us. We've never heard a Christian and talk the way you talk. And then the cantor, a young, handsome, young, tall, handsome young man, stopped, pulled me over at the end of this service and said, Bishop Pearson, I'm sure your evangelical friends would love you to come back and tell them that you got us Jews saved, right? I said, well, they'd like me a whole lot better if I did. He said, well, tell them you got me saved. I said, explain yourself. He said, all my life, I was raised in this town, I had been harassed and abused by Christians. You're the first Christian I could ever stomach listening to. He said, but tonight, after hearing you, you can tell them that I got saved from my anger and my resentment to them. And he started crying, and of course I did too. He said, I was really touched by love tonight, and I got freed and saved from my own anger against a group of people who had insulted me all my life.
That is awesome. And Michael, that's the difference between the message of the gospel of inclusion, the gospel of grace, the gospel of peace, and what a guy like, for example, the aforementioned John Hagee, he has a chance to speak to hundreds of thousands, millions of Jewish people. He's been a huge supporter of Israel, and he could never let them in on exactly what he believes. That's why he got so much trouble with John McCain, because they got a little glimpse into the window of his theology. But the difference between that and what we have, we can share our message with any group, with any audience, with any individual, anytime, day or night, without fear of losing money or fear of losing favor, because this is the message that includes everybody.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And
that's the, you know, that is one of the things
people.
Which we've observed
all along. We're not trying to convert
along,
them and tell them that they're less than.
Just like on Larry King. You know, Larry King has asked every major evangelical leader around the world if he, when he dies, is he going to go to hell as a Jewish man who does not believe in Jesus. And that Jesus is his Lord and Savior. And they will not answer the question. There has not been, Carlton, I don't know if you've followed through up on that or watched Larry King with these interviews, but
I've seen them
very aware.
I've made the same observation.
His interviews with these guys, and it's so amazing, they won't answer his question. They'll say it in their pulpits, but there is something. Either that they are ashamed of what they believe, they have kinder hearts. I remember several years ago, in fact, one of our dear friends, Robert Slairdon, is a dear friend of mine and yours also.
Yes.
I'd made the comment, and Robert still repeats this everywhere he goes. It just a light came on inside of him. Because I've made the comment that when at the point to where that your heart is kinder than your doctrine, guess which one's wrong. And there's so many people that their heart is so much kinder than their doctrine. All they'd have to do is follow their heart. because I believe that this gospel and that Christ does dwell in every heart. And that it's amazing. I remember believing an angry gospel, but my heart was kinder than the gospel that I believed. It was difficult for me to say some of the harsh and angry things that I said, but it was contrary to my heart. And when they get in front of these people, just like Larry King, they will not fess up. They just won't do it.
Yeah.
And they will defer and say, well, I'm not the judge. Yet in the pulpits, they are the judge.
Yeah.
And they tell you exactly who's going to heaven and exactly who's going to hell. But they, you know, but that's what's happening now, is that it's being forced out into the open, even through this political process that we're going through now. The true doctrine that they teach, the cult, as you said, is being forced into the light, no longer to be hidden behind the doors and the most harsh statements that are made, and the most exclusive and exclusionary statements that are made, that are hidden. And then when it gets on CNN or it comes out on to the masses of the public, it gets glossed over. But it can't be glossed over anymore. And that's the reason that it's so vitally important what you're doing right now. And we want to definitely recommend Carlton's book to people, The Gospel of Inclusion, because at this moment, at this very moment in history, evangelical Christianity is being forced out of the closet.
Absolutely.
It has been closeted as to what its true doctrine is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's an interesting way to put it, Michael.
Well, you would expect that from me.
Well, anyway. what I'm thinking and what I'm imagining is that in the same way that gay and lesbian people have been embarrassed to come out of the closet, and literally in some cases have been forced out, now the church, which has been embarrassed in the same way to really reveal what they actually believe in public forums, are being forced to come to grips with what they actually teach in their four walls.
They are
that's
really
part of the revelation you
revive society itself. It's not an individual that's doing it. But it just seems as though that this festering sore that's been inside the church for all of these years, it's coming public now, and it's being seen. And I'm not talking about the haggards and the people who we found out that they were actually humans and make mistakes just like anybody else does. But I'm talking about the doctrine that has supported this system and held people in bondage for thousands of years now.
Yeah.
And you know, my whole thing, and Carlton, you know my heart, regardless of how foolish it is, I truly believe that we are going to share this gospel with the entire planet.
Oh, I have no
less goal than to share it with the entire planet. I can't have a less goal. I can't even imagine what it would feel like to have some goal to start a group or a particular denomination and settle for having a few hundred thousand people. I just can't even imagine thinking that small. Because, I mean, the gospel, the letters that are in our hearts, we know that it's for the entire planet. So you can't have a vision anything less than touching the entire planet.
What were you saying, Carlton?
God so loved the world.
That's exactly right. You were talking, Carlton, a little bit earlier about the fact that so many people are concerned about being converted from where they're at in their personal lives to some cult or some religion, and there's no need for that dynamic to occur anymore, because all they need to be told is, you're already good to go. Whatever, wherever you go, whatever you do, here's God's view of you.
Yeah, it's not so much about us accepting Christ or God. The gospel is that God accepts us, believes in us so much, cherishes us, values us so much, that if we do need redemption, we're redeemed. Now, there's a lot of people that say, well, why do you even use that term? What makes you think God is hostile toward us? I say, that's just what I've been taught. I don't even believe that God is hostile toward us. That's superstitious. That's something we made up. I think that authentic truth is not so much taught or learned as it is remembered.
Yes.
Deep down in the deepest recesses of any person's soul, they will recall love. Because we're all seeking unconditional love. But why? How can you miss something you've never had? Because people, they don't know where in this life they actually experienced unconditional love. But somewhere in what I call the pre-incarnate consciousness, you not only wanted love, we were love. We're made in the image and likeness of God. Anything else is an impersonation. So we've been impersonating people who are sinners or who are not loved or who are without peace or who are poor. All that stuff, superficial and artificial. The reality is we are gods. We are divinities made in the image and likeness of the divine. And when we stop and recall that essence and realize that we agreed to come here, we made a covenant with God before we existed. There's a reference to Jeremiah saying that God is supposed to have said, before I formed you in your mother's womb. Well, who is the formless person that was known by God? Formless, skinless, sinless, nameless, endless, immutable, unchangeable. The part that was known by God. I think that part of us said yes to this journey. You know what? When I stopped protesting, contesting, resisting, and resenting my life, and started saying yes, I felt in my soul that the universe began to organize itself around my yes, and my life has changed dramatically since I stopped feeling like I was being victimized by creation, destiny, or even the church.
Yeah.
I no longer feel like a victim. First time in my life, 55 years, I not only feel saved, Glenn and Michael, I feel safe, S-A-F-E. I fear nothing. I don't even fear the lost sinners. I don't feel like converting Hindus and getting Muslims saved and getting gay folks delivered and all those kind of terms. I see everybody as loved, cherished, redeemed, saved if that's necessary, safe with God, safe with me, welcomed, and affirmed in the planet. Now, you talk about peace, good God from glory. I've never known that kind of peace was imaginable. But now, when I stand before a Unitarian church, or I sit I've sat with pagan Wiccan witches who wanted to be called witches, totally unintimidated by them.
Yes.
Because I'm confident with myself.
Not only that, far from being intimidated, feeling embracing towards them.
Oh, my God.
Like they're part of the deal.
Absolutely.
Which they are.
Absolutely. Yeah, they are.
That's
and that is the sweetest recognition and resolution I've ever come to in all my life. And I've preached with the Billy Grahams and Oral Roberts and T.B. and Jim Baker, not whole fundamentalist evangelical. I mean, I've been with all of them, from Catherine Kuhlman to John Hagee. But I've never felt this kind of resolution in my soul. I am just as happy with Muslims in my house eating and asking me, can they come down in the living room and pray, as I am with Oral Roberts sitting at that table.
Have you had any contact with Oral Roberts?
Oh, yes. We discussed this thoroughly. Of course, we argued some. He's been my friend for 38 years. And like a son and father, I go to his house. I spent the night at his house. We sat with the Bible open for hours. My last conversation with him was 3.5 hours long.
How recently was that?
That was 3 months before Evelyn passed. My long conversation, when I was at his home. That was it'll be 3 years ago this month. Or is it three? Yeah, 3 years ago, I think, when Evelyn passed. This month. Now, Richard, who denounced me, would not allow me to come on the campus, is not welcome on the campus himself. He cannot use the prayer tower or the Navy Center or the prayer gardens. He's no longer the president. But I still love him. He's still my friend if he was open to that, which I'm not sure he is. But the old man, he told me, he said, I'll never let you get away from me. I'm going to love you till you die, son. Now, his grandchildren call me. His grandsons, they email me. I talk with them. The son of the young man, his son who committed suicide, Ronald, has had lunch with me. I recently had lunch with him. Ronald committed suicide. He was same gender loving, and he was strung out on drugs to a certain extent. He was trying to drown out his guilt. He didn't want to embarrass his father. In fact, he was attending the church where the Unitarian Church, where 2 Sundays from now, and Michael, you got to come and preach there. I'm going to have a, I'm going to start having my Sunday morning service there at 11:30. They said, come to our church. Now, I used to drive by that church and try to cast the devil out of it. And I got cast into it. So, I mean, with all these folks I demonize no one but the doctrines that hold us in hostage.
That's
see everybody as valuable, valued, my equal, really. It's just so beautiful.
It's a beautiful thing. And we're talking with Carlton Pearson. This is Glenn Klein Online. We got Michael Williams, President of the Gospel Revolution. It is the Spring Pledge Drive. We want to hear from you tonight. We got a few more minutes left. 800-436-3260. We're taking your donations. Carlton, we're trying to raise the budget for the next 3 months here. Try to give the folks an idea, and you alluded to it earlier, about the impact that Michael's teaching has had, not just on you, but on the global effort to spread the word that everybody is righteous in the sight of God.
This message that Michael has been preaching is the renaissance of the 21st century. It is the only positive operative that I think is being blessed by the universe. It is crescendoing. I mean, it is the most fertile. Michael has had all kinds of dung and fertilizer thrown on him. But that has made him the most fertile soil to sow into. This is rich soil, and it's moving so fast, it's hard to keep up with it. I get tens of thousands of emails from around the world, from Mormons, Muslims, Jews, Quakers, gay, straight, tri, bi. I say try, folks trying to have sex and cake. Everybody. I get some of the most incredible responses. And I'm thinking, my God, this is the newest move. This is the freshest move. If you want to be a part of something that is happening, both mentally and monetarily, this is where to sow your seeds. I don't know what the operative is, how you're doing it, but I would encourage the listeners to really get involved with this. We got to make this thing happen.
Well, it's happening. Can you imagine, Carlton, in November in Houston, you're going to be there. Michael's going to be there. We're all going to be there. All these people coming from around the world who understand, they don't have to be convinced. They don't have to be prodded. They're all going to come together to celebrate our oneness with each other in November in Houston.
Oh, it's the cry of the universe.
It
come,
is,
come, come. And I think we're going to be surprised. They're going to come. I was saying earlier, I get letters from Romania, from Turkey, from St. Petersburg, Russia. This is sweeping because it's the same voice in the universe is speaking all over the universe. All they need is a rallying call. And I think this event in November is a rallying call. It's a corralling call. And we're coming. We're coming by the thousands.
Amen, brother, from another mother. Hey, thank you so much for your time, Carlton. And when's your new book, God is Not a Christian, going to come out?
That'll be released in March of 2009 by Simon & Schuster, my Jewish friends again.
Yeah. I tell you, those Jews, man, they are behind the gospel.
One of the rabbis said, we're going to pull every string we can to help you get your message, your gospel of inclusion out. A Jewish rabbi said that.
Well, you know, the sequel to that book is God is Not a Republican. That's the next book.
I've had a lot of people say that. Well, I think everybody recognizes. And the president, you know, I'm not trying to necessarily publicly endorse Obama, but he's probably going to be the next president, and he is very much where we are. I know Jeremiah Wright personally. I know what he's thinking, and I know how they took. We could take snippets of Jesus' message where he said, eat my flesh and drink my blood. That sounds like cannibalism. Cut your arm off and avenge your eye. That sounds like self-mutilation. Hate your mother and father. I mean, if you take things out of context, we don't know, you know, authentically what some of the things he said if they're authentic. But you can take snippets from anything that we've said and destroy somebody's whole career if you want to.
No doubt.
So we need to be careful. But I think that the whole, from American government to the governments of the world, this message is so fitted and so fashioned and so formed for this very hour
this is the time to get involved. And I'm so glad that you gentlemen had me on tonight. And thank you for the time and the friendship and the space. And the best is yet to come.
It sure is, Carlson. We really appreciate it and celebrate what you do.
Wayne Dyer says, when you change the way you
look
at things,
together.
The things you look at change.
You guys, the next time we do this, you're going to have to stop talking over each other. I know I know how in sync you are.
But if we were in the same room, we'd have to raise hands to talk. We both have to.
I like that. Tri and bisexuals, even.
Yeah, bisexuals and trisexuals.
That's. See, you taught us a lot tonight, Carlton, and we really appreciate it. We appreciate your time and cannot wait to see you in person in Houston in November. And so are you going to be in other cities in the near future where people might be able to come see you? You're going to be on any television shows?
Yes, I'm in Chicago Sunday after next at the Christ Universal Church. There's a big church that I'm going to speak at there. I was with... Gosh, I'm all over the country. Almost every Sunday, my people here wondering, am I a pastor anymore?
Well, can people go to your website to follow your travels?
Yes.
What is that website?
BishopPearson.com.
Nice. Well, we really appreciate it.
And if they Google me, they'll find all the heretical things that they say about me, but that's okay, Google
it. But we found out, Carlton, what heresy actually means.
What?
Michael, you want to tell Carlton what heresy actually means?
You go right ahead.
No, I think that would be a perfect opportunity for you to explain, because you are the number one heretic that I know.
He was a heretic way before me.
Heresy is simply believing that which the masses have not yet received.
Wow. Powerful. I should put that in my book.
Write that down.
Yeah, I like that, Michael.
Williams is spelled W-I-L-L-I-M-S.
I'll give you credit and I'll keep the cash.
Can't wait for November, Carlton.
It's going to be a blast. Can't wait to get there, guys.
Hopefully we'll be able to talk to you before that, but thank you so much for your time tonight.
Anytime. Hang tough. I'll be there.
All right, man.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Carlton Pearson, ladies and gentlemen, bishopcarlton.com. That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
All right, so we're going to go over a few minutes here because we took so much time with Carlton. We have got to get some more money coming in. This is the Spring Pledge Drive. We've had a $50 donation earlier from George Howell, and I'm hoping that the Pittsburgh Penguins are winning, so maybe George will be in a better mood as he goes to bed in Des Moines, Iowa. And but we're at $2,075. We're trying to raise. We at the end of this week. Now I know a lot of you folks listen on the archive. At the end of the week, before we come to you next week, we'd like to be around $10,000. So we have a lot to make up. Let us hear from you. Just go to the GospelRevolution.com webpage. Click on donations. Do your best, whether it be a monthly gift or a one-time gift. Regardless of what you do, for $100 or more in total, you will receive free and postage paid the new teaching CD. Avoid Strange Gospel that was, ironically, Michael, taught at Carlton Pearson's Church in Tulsa.
Yes, it was. And as I said, I've listened to part of that CD myself, and I highly recommend it.
you learned some stuff from yourself, did you?
I learned. That's what is so strange, is that I go back, if I do listen to any of this, I don't know what it is. I'm not a big fan of going back and listening to my own material. But any time that I do, I'm amazed at what I said. You know, I don't remember saying so much of the things that are really some of the most relevant things that have come out in the teaching and then gets recorded and duplicated on the CDs. It's quite an interesting experience to listen to yourself say things that you have no clue you ever said before.
And never had thought of before you said it.
Never, and didn't think of them afterwards, evidently, either.
This is Glenn Klein Online. We've got a few more minutes. We want to welcome online from California, Mr. Michael Matzy. Michael!
Yes, sir.
How are you tonight?
I'm good. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, we hear you just fine. Did you hear Carlton Pearson?
Yeah. I heard him... most all of it.
That was kind of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you guys finally figured everything out. It took long enough. I remember when God first got a hold of me way back then. I used to watch, you know, guys that were preaching what he used to preach, and, you know, watching TBN. And first, you know, I lived real close to where the headquarters were for TBN, and I used to go over there and sit there in the audience, and, you know, got to know some people over there. And I used to look at some of these guys used to come in, and I would look, and I'm like, what, these guys are, you know, what the heck? And then eventually, you know, the Reverend Dr. Williams came tooling along over at the Eagle's Nest there, and he's the first guy that ever I looked at and said, I think, you know what, I think there's hope.
And Carlton is such a great spokesman for this, Michael. I mean, you talk about a guy who is well-versed and well-connected and just sounds so great. And So, Mike, was there something specific that you wanted to share tonight?
Well, no, you know, I was just listening, you know, prior to when Carlton came out. And of course, I've been, you know, doing my own little meditations off and on. We've been so busy with the baby and everything else, trying to figure out what to do with it, you know. And I was in listening to Carlton. I kind of felt bad for him because he was kind of going through his thing about, you know, what he had and what he lost. And in the middle of that, I wrote this down, and I just don't know if he's still listening or not. But it made sense to me. And what I wrote was, it said that your ministry, his ministry, even Mike's before, was no ministry at all. Just as all those who are supposedly have, just as all those who now supposedly have ministries, speaking about evangelical type people, they have no ministry. They just don't know it yet. Now he has a ministry.
Yeah, it's called the ministry of death and condemnation, is what we had before.
Right. That's so what he didn't lose anything. He didn't have anything. Now he has everything. And when he finished up there and he was doing wrapping it up about how now that he's free to love everybody, and, you know, that there's no, you know, and Mike, you know, so eloquently, you know, puts that to words about, you know, everyone being on the same level, and when that becomes a reality in your life and you look at people in that way, and you look at yourself that way, you know, it's priceless. That's the gospel. That's what people need, and that's what he has now. And if he keeps putting that forth, which I'm sure he will, and he's fine tuning and learning every day, just like everybody else, then, you know, what Mike's seeing, you know, for the future is going to come to pass, and it's just the way it is. There's no. You know, and there was another thing that there was a few weeks ago. Some guy called in or emailed you that he was hooked up with a church. I guess he was handicapped or something, and they were supplementing his income. And anyway, he embraced this, you know, the gospel of grace, and they cut him off, and you know, and then his wife threw him under the bus and all these other things.
Yep.
And he was kind of feeling bad, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, he's right and they're wrong. They're the ones should be thrown under the bus. You know, we need to stand up to these people and say, whoa, you're the one that's wacky. Now, listen to me for a minute. And then, you know, throw them over to Mike Williams and let them listen for a couple of weeks or a month or two. So, you know, that's what it's coming to. You know, I get a little indignant, you know, because, you know, some of the people I deal with in the business world are predators and con artists and everything else. And when you see that in the church, you know, it's irritating. You know, you get tired of it. Enough is enough.
Well, that's
taking people's money on false pretenses and lying to them. And
well, that's where we see it. Some of the worst manifestation of the predators and the con artists. I was watching this guy who used to be mayor of Boston. I can't forget I can't remember his first name, but Mayor Flynn, who ended up being the ambassador to the Vatican. And he was talking about how Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, has now requested a meeting with Pope Benedict. And this guy said he learned more about politics in his years at the Vatican than he ever learned in his 55 years in American politics. He was saying it as a compliment to the Roman Catholic Church. But, I mean, those guys, they know politics. And,
sure. Well, you know, I grew up in Chicago like you, and you know, I was a Catholic in Chicago, and firsthand I know, you know.
Well, Mike, this is the second night of the pledge drive, and we've got another call on the line. But did you want to participate in the pledge drive tonight?
Yeah, I will, but I'm not gonna let the left hand know what the right hand is doing. So it'll be a surprise.
All right. Well, let us know eventually so we can include it in our goal.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Always do.
Just emails. Thank you, brother.
All right, Michael.
We'll see.
Hey, Mikey.
We'll see you in Houston. I hope.
I hope so. I'm counting on it.
All right, man.
All right.
That's Michael Massey, ladies and gentlemen, from sunny California. This is fun, Mike. I've said this several times. I'm having a good time tonight.
Yes,
of course, we usually do, don't we?
We normally do.
Yes.
It's nice when fun is normal.
It's fundamental.
Yes, it is.
And we want to welcome online now, calling from Iowa, Chris Ann. How are you, Chris?
Doing great, Glenn and Michael. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Chris Ann.
How's it going there? Did you survive the storms?
Well, yeah. I just, matter of fact, I haven't been listening to the broadcast at all. I just drove back into town from Parkersburg, where the F5 hit on Sunday night, and took my kids there to really see what it was all about, and it was just total devastation. And so we had our little discussions on the way back about, did God allow this, you know, does he do this and why and all that kind of stuff. And I just thought, you know, I'll bet you Michael and Glenn could push that around a little bit. But it was a very sobering experience, to say the least. And we're, you know, but they're great people in the state of Iowa, and they're all pulling together, but it looked like a war zone, and I'd never seen anything like it in my life, so, but, you know, God's grace is there, and for those people, and they're pulling together, and I know God did not do that, and you know, Mother Nature did that, as far as I'm concerned. You know?
Well, here's the thing, Michael, is that when something like that happens, whether it be an earthquake in China or a cyclone in Burma or tornadoes in the Midwest of the United States, no matter how somebody wants to frame that vis-a-vis God, it doesn't change the gospel one iota.
That's right.
And the acceptance, Michael, that God did not do this to somebody. You know, so many times storms happen in places like New Orleans or San Francisco, or I remember when the forest fires were hitting Central Florida, and the people like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell said, well, that was because Disney extended equal benefits to their gay employees. When it hits in rural America, in the buckle of the Bible Belt, you don't hear any comments about that.
No, not at all. I made a comment like that last night at a meeting I went to, and I brought up that point, you know, that very point that you just mentioned, and I said, you know, this isn't what it's all about, you guys. We're missing the whole point, you know. If the wrath of God, you know, came on San Francisco because of the gays living there, of the earthquake or whatever, then, you know, then I wonder what kind of sin is going on, you know, in Parkersburg, Iowa, you know. And I said, it's just, you know, that's just, it doesn't follow through, you know, it just doesn't follow through. So,
well, Michael, that's kind of been the theme of, between what we've been talking about with Carlton and all night long, is that the insanity of legalism and a results-based religion is coming to the fore for everybody to see.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, the basis of that and the true heart of it really is being exposed. And, you know, the tragedies behind the pulpit have been used to express these doctrines, yet in public they, you know, there is a glossing over of those doctrines. Because they sound so ridiculous. I think they know they sound ridiculous, and only the faithful, you know, who have been steeped in it so long that they have no sensitivity to even their own heart, much less to other people. And but yeah, it's definitely being exposed. But you know, the the doctrine, of course, I coined years ago the term doctrines of convenience. Of course, when disasters do happen at whether it's Regent University or when the hurricane force winds came through there and there was damage, of course it was the work of the devil trying to stop them because they were so of God. The very same thing can happen to somebody else, and it's because the wrath of God is trying to stop them because they're so of the devil. You just turn around, put on a different suit, and it's supposed to make the doctrine difference. But it's not. It's just the two opposite ends of the same dirty stick. So
no
thank
doubt.
God we got to throw it all away, didn't we, Chris Ann?
So, Chris Ann, are you making any plans to come to Houston in November?
Oh, yeah. I talked with Michael. I've already called and set up our reservations for the room.
Got a room reserved.
And we're very excited about it. And
we're excited to see it.
Looking forward to it immensely, and I wanted to, I'm going to make a $25 a month pledge. I wanted to let you guys know that.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Yeah, so.
Thank you very much. That helps a lot. And
okay.
You're going to get the CD, Avoid Strange Gospels, Chris Ann.
Oh, dear, Gus, sure I want to listen to that.
Yeah, you definitely want to listen to that.
Michael
even learned things from himself by listening to that, so it's got to be good.
All right.
It's awesome.
Well, I told my friend Angie that, we got to get some more CDs, Angie. So you send them on. That'll be great. I'd love to have
all right,
that.
Well, just go on the website, and we'll include that in the goal, and then click on donations and do your thing, because it's all automated now.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, you guys.
But we really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris Ann. We love you.
We appreciate you guys.
All right.
You guys take care, okay?
Good night. There's Chris Ann. That's a $300 donation, $25 a month for a year. So
yep.
That takes us to $2,375 on our way to $10,000, hopefully by the end of the week. We know that a lot of you folks listen to the archives, and what we're encouraging you to do is make up the difference. We're attempting to raise $15,000. In these 3 weeks, and we've got a week now between the time we say goodnight until the time we go back online next week. And so we need you folks to get online and email us whatever you did at gospelrevolution.com. Just click on donations. There's all different levels of giving, monthly or a one-time gift. For $100 or more total, you will receive the aforementioned teaching CD, Avoid Strange Gospels. And just email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com so we can include that in our total. Michael, in closing, and Carlton, put it really well, but just from your own heart, can you express to the folks why it's important right now to be financially supportive of this effort?
Well, we're just at that point. At that place where that all things come to, that it is that vitally important that the financial part of it begins to hold itself up, and the volume. Guys, you heard the impact that this has had in Carlton Pearson's life, and that has been duplicated so many times with many different ministers of the caliber of Carlton that got the tapes, and it's had a profound impact. But now there's a serious moving forward of this gospel. Those of you that have got your hearts established in grace, now, it is important. It's important for you. It's not just important for the work. It's important for you and for your life to reach forward into the lives of other people. It's just a part of the circle of life. It's nothing, it's not a spiritual guarantee of any kind, but it certainly is a tremendous expression of that which you have in your own heart, and to reach to the lives. You know what it's done for you, and that's all we're asking you to consider.
if it has done such profound things as in your life and in Carlton's life and others around the world that it's now impacting. I agree with Carlton. You know, it's a good place to invest, for sure.
You use the term sow your seed.
Yes.
I like that retaking of that language.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah, and you know, I could say especially in harder economic times, this is the time, folks, to say to your money, you don't have me, I have you, and this is what I want to do with you, is participate. Don't think that a $10 donation is too little. Don't think $5 is too little. Don't think a dollar is too little. And if you've got some extra cash and you know that you've done well this year, this is a great place to give to a tax-deductible, non-for-profit, charitable effort. I mean, this is the ultimate in charitable effort. I mean, if charity, Michael, means love and means the giving of things without strings attached, what better effort could somebody give to than the spreading of the proclamation that all humanity is not only righteous in God, but we're all one family. This is a very important message of this hour in human history.
Yeah. It is. And, you know, it's to have the excitement to say, you know, I was part of it. I am a part of it and will be a part of it. For me, that's tremendous. I mean, we are irrevocably attached to that which has attached itself to us, and you know, we just really everybody just jump in with both feet, and don't be shy. It's a wonderful place to be.
You know, I loved last week when we talked to Ken Vandiver in Oklahoma how he was talking about the gospel revolution as a team. He was saying we need to do this, and we're doing this, and that's the reality. The gospel revolution isn't a webcast. The gospel revolution isn't Michael going around the country, around the world, just teaching people. We are all on the same team, and we're all doing our part, and we're asking you to do your part tonight, too. Just go to gospelrevolution.com, click on donations, do your best that you can do, and one more time, for $100 or more in total giving, you will receive free and postage pay the new CD taught at Carlton Pearson's Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Avoid strange gospels. That's good advice, Michael, to avoid strange gospels, but also to embrace the real gospel, the gospel of peace, the gospel of love, the gospel of grace, unconditional acceptance for all humanity through Christ.
Goodness.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is.
Well, we didn't get to any email questions except from the one from Running Turtle tonight. So for Kara and for Christina, we'll get to your questions next week, hopefully. I will be up at the Gospel Revolution Northern Outpost for the whole summer starting next week. So I'll come to you from Wisconsin. Michael will be in Houston, and we hope to hear from you wherever you are listening from. Mikey, thanks so much. This was great.
Yes, it was. It was a historical night in the gospel revolution.
No doubt. Want to thank Kristen Shira, our studio audience, and we want to thank George Howell for calling, for Melissa, and for Chris Ann, and Carlton Pearson, and Mike Matzey, and Chris Harrington, and Glenda Harrington. Thank you all for participating and for listening. And until next week, this is Glenn Klein. Did I thank Sean O'Halloran?
No, you didn't.
Oh, no, I have to especially thank Sean O'Halloran.
Especially thank Sean.
And for engineering, producing, and being our call screener and donation taker extraordinaire. This is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!